when they're not broadcasting, the ACBRI DJs are hard at work creating personal web pages about their shows, the music they play, and even a little bit about themselves. And you can visit these web pages by going to the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring. To check out the web ring, go to interactive.acbradio.org. Then choose the link for the web ring. You can view a site at random, or you can look at a list of all the websites in the ring. So if you want to learn more about the personalities behind the microphone, go to interactive.acbradio.org and check out the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring.
ACB Radio Mainstream is always looking for new and innovative programming. But in 2002... they found me. I'm Dave Williams here in Preston, where we're putting together ACB Radio Mainstream's newest program, The UK Connection. We start Thursdays at 1 GMT, that's Wednesday evenings in the States, with a mix of news, views and interviews. We're looking for your contributions as well, so drop us a line, dave@acbradio.org, that's dave@acbradio.org, or even pick up the phone and call the UK on 44700 533 8876. That's 44700 533 8876. The UK Connection.
Don't you think he sounds tired?
Hang out with other ACB Radio listeners. Talk with the hosts. Provide suggestions about the future of ACB Radio. It's all possible through the ACB Radio Friends List.
Thank you for being a friend.
Log on and sign up now. Send a blank message to friends-subscribe@acbradio.org. That's friends-subscribe@acbradio.org. And thank you for being a friend of ACB Radio.
ACB Radio Mainstream, now delivered live to your phone in the UK using phoneanything.com. The internet over the phone. www.phoneanything.com.
Programming on ACB Radio is made possible in part through financial support from the Verizon Corporation. Verizon, a proud sponsor of ACB Radio.
Hello, wherever in the world you may be listening from, this is Blind Line, the original interactive talk show exclusively for the blind and vision impaired. I'm Jonathan Mosen. The Beatles belting out that they want money. It's very nice if you have money, but one of the big issues is trying to get access to the stuff, even when you do have it, and that's what we're going to be talking about for the first part of the program, accessible automatic teller machines. It seems that some headway is being made in that area, and somebody who's been doing a great job in terms of making sure that that advocacy progresses is Lainey Feingold, and she joins us on the line now, and a very good Sunday evening to you.
Same to you, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
How did you become involved in this vexing question of accessible ATMs?
Well, I used to be litigation director at the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, which is a disability civil rights nonprofit law group here in Berkeley. And members of the blindness community approached both me and private civil rights firm with whom I've worked and said, we got a problem here. And that's what started it, actually, many years ago.
So it became a very much national issue after originally, I take it, being a state issue.
Right. Well, when we first started, banks in America tended to be more, you know, state-based.
Right.
And now, with everybody buying everybody else, a lot of the largest banks are national in scope. So I'm happy to say we now have talking ATMs in 30 states of the United States, even though we started just in California.
Those are impressive statistics. 2,000 machines in 30 states now.
Right. Actually, yeah, probably closer to 2,500 now because we're getting more online every month.
So let's go back to the beginning and trace this fascinating story. What was the original reaction from the banking industry when people started saying, look, we really need to have access to these machines. It's possible. It's doable. Let's get on with it.
Well, you know, like any other new thing, and the banking industry tends to be a conservative industry, because banking after all, you know, the initial response was, we can't do it, or we already have Braille on the machines. That was a big thing we heard a lot of, because the machines here tend to have Braille labels. with instructions on how to do things, although because an ATM is an interactive machine, the static instructions don't work. But that's pretty much what we heard, that it can't be done, the manufacturers aren't doing it, we already have Braille in the machines, the security problem, blind people aren't going to want to use these things, it's too dangerous, stuff like that.
It's amazing how many people in the banking industry genuinely believe, you know, we've got Braille on the buttons, what more do you need?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and, you know, I think the only way, the way we changed minds here, and really the only way to do it, is that the blind community has to actually meet the bankers, and I cannot tell you how many tech people who work in the industry have told me that when they saw a blind person try to use a machine that wasn't talking, that's when the light bulb went off.
Okay. And so that's how you started. Was it that you encouraged members of the banking industry to actually see how it wasn't possible?
Yeah, well, see, we're lucky here because under the Americans with Disabilities Act, since 1992, the regulations have said that ATMs must be independently usable by people with vision impairments. So that has been on the books since 1992. So I'm a lawyer, and we approached the banks, and we said, look, you have a problem here. You're in violation of the ADA. We would rather not have a lawsuit. We would rather work collaboratively with you, because I personally think that is the best way to get things done. And, you know, we were lucky enough that the banks are willing to sit down with us, and, yeah, now we have 2,300 of them.
I suppose that one of the questions that you must have had to grapple with quite early in the piece was interface design, exactly what these things would say and whether it would be synthetic speech or human speech, all of those technological issues that are so critical to this.
Yeah, well, when we started, and in fact, you know, the first talking ATM was installed in the United States in October of 1999, and we're, you know, only in the first half of 2002, and already there's been so many improvements on these issues, the scripting, the technology. The first machines, and many of the machines that are out there now, used live recorded voices on WAV files, which were effective for the end user, but tended to make it more expensive for the bank, because every time something needed to be changed, they had to find the original person, re-record a file, load it by hand onto the machine. So, yeah, we've been dealing with those issues, and the machines are getting better and better.
Yes, synthetic speech is getting better and better too, isn't it? It's much more understandable than it used to be.
That's true, and that's another place where the technicians who, tend to be sighted without actually working with people in the blindness community. They don't really get it, because I think when you're sighted, you're not really hearing the synthetic speech the same way that people who are blind are used to hearing it, because they're used to hearing it more often.
Yes. I should just mention that if anyone would like to ask any questions of Lani, you're most welcome to give us a call. The number here is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked for a conference code, your one to enter, courtesy of spiderphone.com, is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. So is there a lot of variance between banks in terms of the way these machines work and what they say?
Well, most of the machines in the United States now are made by the NCR Corporation or the Diebold Corporation, and they sell ATMs to a lot of different banks. So they tend to be pretty uniform. You know, not ideal, because the banks want the so-called look and feel of their own institution. So some have a more casual expression, you know.
Okay.
What do you want to do next? Or what function would you like to perform now? You know, things like that. But they basically, all the NCR and Diebold machines basically have the same interface. They use a standard telephone keypad. They have additional function keys for clear, cancel, execute, and clear, cancel, execute, and correct.
Right. And so when you're using one of these machines, it actually tells you, it orientates you with those buttons, correct? It tells you where to find them.
Yeah, we have a orientation at the beginning. So when the machines work with a standard Walkman headset, and you can bring your own, or the banks are giving them for free. and you just plug it in, and there's a continuous loop playing at the beginning. So you come in the middle of it or wherever, and it gives you an orientation to the machine. If you've used it before and you don't need an orientation, you can put your card in and start your transaction right away. They all tell you how to put the card in, the raised letters up and facing to the left, something like that. And then for each transaction, it walks you through. Now, in addition to the Diebold and NCR machines, Citibank, which used to make its own ATMs, not buy them from an outside manufacturer, they have developed talking ATMs without a keypad interface. They have 100% touch screen, which is kind of an exciting development that we were able to make those accessible as well.
How does that actually work in practice? Because generally blind people get a bit scared by the concept of touch screens.
Right, and there's been, you know, it does take a little more education, but basically the Citibank machines work. There's only, there's three places to touch along the screen, and the when you put your headphone in, it instructs you where those are. It's basically the left of the screen, the right of the screen, and the middle along the bottom. And the plastic surround around the touch screen has indentations or grooves, so you know where the center is. You just slide your finger up, and where it touches is. And those three places go forward, back, and select. So you just cycle through the screen. If you press forward enough times, you're going to hear everything that's on the screen. When you hear what you want, you press select.
Okay.
It's all those three buttons along the bottom.
Hmm. Interesting. Area code 512 has called in, and we'll take that call now. Hi, you're speaking with Lainey Feingold. At least I hope you are. Area code 512, hello.
Hi, I'm Paul Hunt, and I hope you're speaking to me.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jonathan, and good evening to your guests as well. I'm listening to all this information about accessing ATMs and accessible ATMs. I've never used one, and I'd like to. Problem I have is when they make these things accessible and they roll them out, because it's critical where they roll them out as that they roll them out at all. Most of the ATM machines in Austin, Texas, are in outlying locations. Many of them are in parking lots that are not anywhere near buildings. Some of them are in drive-up lanes, and it would be nice to be able to affect the rollout schedule of the bank so that we get them where we want them. I happen to be—I deal with Wells Fargo. We have a branch bank downtown, and we have one at UT. Neither one of them have the talking ATM machines in them, and that's where they really need to be.
Well, I think that's a really important point, and we have tried as much as we can to influence the placement of these, especially in the early stages where people are getting used to them. And there's a couple factors. One is people who are listening, if you want an ATM in a talking ATM in a certain place, you should notify the bank and tell them. Another thing is, I can give my email address now or at the end, and for all the banks we have ongoing relationships with, we deal directly with either the lawyers or sort of senior people, and we can communicate location requests. One thing is that the cost of doing a talking ATM varies. Most of the machines we have in the United States now are upgrades of existing machines. It's not like they had to buy a brand new ATM. They can use an upgrade kit and upgrade and the price of upgrading existing machines varies. And so, obviously, it's easier to convince them to put more in if they're upgrading ones that cost less money. So that's sort of factored into the locations.
Okay, do you want to deal with the bank at the branch level or at the main corporate level?
Well, you know, another very important thing here is education of the branch staff. And I can't tell you how many times we've heard stories, like I'll put out an announcement says Wells Fargo has ATMs in such and such a state, and people will call, and the person answering the phone won't know. So that is something we try to work on. And again, the only way to affect this is for the community nationally to be demanding these and using the ones that are out there.
Okay,
so
I would
ask at the, you know, usually the phone-in number is best. Like they have an 800, most of these banks have 800 numbers that you can look up in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
And my email is lfeingold, F-E-I-N-G-O-L-D, @california.net. And people can feel free to, you know, send me an email, tell me what the bank is and what the location. course, we don't have a relationship with all the banks in the country, but we do happen to have one with Wells Fargo.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Appreciate that.
Great question. Thank you for that.
Okay. You're welcome.
Bye-bye now. If you'd like to speak with Lainey Feingold, we're talking accessible ATMs and probably a bit about accessible banking services generally. Our number's 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800. You should find that in the title bar of your player. And then when you're asked to enter a conference code, 0480-5512. So are some banks better at this than others, Lainey? I mean, are some still dragging the chain?
Well, knock on wood, you know, everybody that we have approached has really, you know, operated in good faith and working hard, and you know, not everybody's done it. And I think some of the smaller institutions are kind of afraid of the cost because it still isn't an off-the-shelf product that they can buy. There is development that needs to be done at the bank level. So it's not like they can just purchase a talking ATM in the same way that they can purchase an ATM. There's additional development work. So I think the smaller banks are the next phase, although we have an agreement with a bank called Union Bank out here in California. They have about 400 locations just in California, Washington, and Oregon, and I think they're going to end up being the first bank in the country where every single branch has a talking ATM because they just jumped on it and made a very big commitment.
That's impressive, and hopefully they'll get appropriate kudos for that.
Yeah, well, we try to, you know, the press is getting a little sick of it, but when we go into new states, it always makes a good story. And if people are listening, you know, it is a, originally we try to get it covered in business or in technology, but the folks down, the ACB folks down in Florida got a very nice story in, like, the human interest part of the newspaper. They had a picture, talking ATM, somebody using the talking ATM, and it was good for the organization. So I think that there's a lot of room for giving these banks credit and getting, you know, the issue out to the mainstream.
In terms of the cost factor, are there economies of scale here if a bank chooses to update a whole heap of ATMs at once? Does that make more sense economically?
You know, they don't necessarily share with us all the details of the cost, which I take it as a sign that it's not too bad. I think once you've done one, it's cheaper to do more than one. Well, the big investment is the first. And once you've done that, the cost is not as... Well, the cost isn't prohibitive anyways. I mean, we're talking about banks. But
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if... I don't know how the manufacturers price it. You know, they keep the pricing actually very confidential. So except for the Citibank experience, the banks are all buying these, either the upgrade kits or the new machines themselves, from the manufacturers of the ATM. So it's whatever kind of deal they can work out with them.
Presumably, there are new machines being manufactured all the time, or at some point a new series of ATM will come out. At that point, do you expect that to be accessible right out of the box?
Well, yeah, and it's getting to be more that way. I mean, it's... One really good development we've had in the last 6 months is with a company called Triton, and I really give them a lot of kudos for this. They initially felt they have the smaller machines, the standalone machines, and they're not a bank. They are a manufacturer that tends to sell to other businesses. And they originally felt it was not something that they were going to be able to do, and their two recent models that are shipping now come, I think, they come standard with the hardware, maybe even the software. So that has been a big breakthrough in the last 6 months to get them on board. They're called Triton.
So that promises... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You mentioned other services. I just want to throw out that we are trying to work with these banks on the accessibility of their websites and also on alternative formats for their printed materials, making sure the bank statements are in Braille or large print, as well as all the other documents that they put out. So, again, that's something people need to ask for, because the only way it's really going to take is if the community asks for it.
Yeah, to what extent is Braille billing available from banks in the U.S.?
It's getting better, I'm happy to say. The talking ATMs are coming about. We have legally binding settlement agreements with a lot of these banks, and we, in most of them, also have an obligation to provide the billing and other materials in Braille. And in some of the banks, we have the accessibility of their website. And I could direct people, if they want to see the kind of thing that we're trying to work on, like Fleet.com, Fleet Bank out of Boston. They made a very nice commitment to web access, and they have a page up there explaining what they're doing, and they have a place for comments on the accessibility. About 5 or 6 banks in the United States now have the ability to find the talking ATMs on their locator pages. So it's moving. It's moving in a good direction, but again, it's going to take people continually demanding the level of service entitled to.
It's really a matter of human dignity, isn't it? It is so dreadful to have to rely on someone else to read such private information to you, such as your bank balance and statements, etc.
Well, our stock answer on that whole security thing, you know, isn't it going to be so dangerous if a blind person is at an ATM getting money? You know, our stock answer was, well, it's a lot more dangerous to have to give your PIN number to a stranger and let them get the money out for you. You know, or people will say, well, you know, people, problem is the mainstream does not have a lot of experience with blind people. And it's all about explaining to people, yeah, people live by themselves and they don't want to have to share their financial information, like you say, with, you know, either a paid reader or if they happen to live with a family member, you know, people want to have confidential financial records.
Mm, it's just so fundamental and it takes so much explaining.
It does take a lot of explaining.
All right, let's go to another call. We'll go to area code 631. Hi there, you're speaking with Lainey Feingold.
Hi, John. How are you doing tonight?
Good, thanks.
I was just curious, you know, a lot of these, this is Richard Costa, by the way, a lot of these ATMs are being turned into multifunctional, not only where you can do your banking, but also getting things like tickets and for plays or movies or airline tickets, a lot of multifunctional things. So how is the technology being able to make those kind of things accessible as well? Because it seems like they're not just used, being developed for just banking.
Well, that's a very good question, and it's an important one, and it's a reason why we have to, the struggle isn't over for this. The original technology for the first generation talking ATMs was pre-recorded WAV files. And with pre-recorded WAV files, they could not voice the kind of dynamic information that is involved in the type of functionality you're talking about, like the ticket sales, because that information comes down from a central host and changes day by day. The good news on the front is that as soon as we're moving towards having a text-to-speech screen reader in the machine that will be able to read whatever text happens to come into the machine, we're going to be able to have all that functionality. So we're kind of in an in-between stage, I'd say, right now. The very first talking ATMs, for example, did not allow you to get your account balance.
I remember that. Yeah.
For the same reason, because, you know, they could pre-record, what would you like to do now? How much would you like to withdraw? But everybody's balance was unique. And so when it came down from the central host, they couldn't read it. But we have solved that problem, and now virtually all the talking ATMs in the United States do give account balance.
Now, what about these, of course, a lot of people are going to with these touch, you know, the touch screens where you just touch a hot spot on the screen and does that. So are there still issues about that as well?
Well, I mean, just having to, when you have it to, as long as there's a keypad. And most of the manufacturers are still putting in a keypad because they're finding that sighted people are more comfortable with the keypad. So even though there's some functionality that if you're sighted you can do by touching various parts of the screen, they can, what they call, map that to the keypad and have a forward, back, and select, have three keys dedicated to forward, back, and select. Mm-hmm. And with that interface and a text-to-speech solution inside the machine, you can get access to whatever they throw up on the screen. But this is, again, an ongoing process. It's not just over, and it's important.
Yeah, because it seems like every time you turn around when you think you've got it nailed down, they're coming out with new features and new ways they want to use these ATMs, and then we still have to play catch-up in order to get to that functionality.
Yeah, well, there's a good and a bad side. The fact that basically ATMs have been the same since the early 70s, and it's only in the last several years that they're developing this new kind of functionality, which means they need more sophisticated machines, which in some ways makes it easier for them to do voice.
Right.
So we're trying to, you know, seize that moment. But you're absolutely right that the fancier they get, the initial WAV file solution was, put it this way, it's challenging to get all that functionality.
Yeah, because let's face it, I mean, if the things are dynamic and you have a static way of doing something that's dynamic, it's just not going to work. It's just common sense. It's not going to happen.
Right. And so we, you know, for the end user, for the basic function, I mean, the other thing is the industry itself is not quite sure how far they want to go with these ATMs, because there's all these ideas. Oh, we could use an ATM for this, that, and the other thing. But it's not quite clear yet whether that's really going to take, because most high 90% of the people going to an ATM are using it for cash,
and it's like the thing with the banks trying to push the smart. It seems like something very good in Europe, and it's taken off in other countries, but for some reason it still hasn't really flown as far. It would solve a lot of problems, I would think, for us as well to have the smart cards as well, but it's unfortunate that hasn't taken off.
Well, people in the United States, I mean, first of all, ATM usage itself is much higher on the two coasts than it is in the heartland of the United States. And the statistics for, like, how many people even deposit into the machines are not high at all compared to cash withdrawal. So I'm not convinced yet all this functionality is really going to stick, but you're absolutely make a very good point that we have to be ever vigilant and we don't rest on our laurels that, you know, we've come this far.
But I can understand exactly what you mean about the websites. I mean, I use Chase Manhattan, and all of a sudden one day it was a perfectly fine site, and now they just threw up all this job. Even my father, who was sighted, he hates it because they've made the page just really a lot harder, because it's like two or three, four times before you finally get the page to where you can put in your ID and password to get to where you want to go to look at your accounts. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Richard. Some very good points.
Yeah. Take care, John.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye. Yes. Always keeping an eye on the ball is what it's all about. You mentioned earlier about ringing the 800 number and talking to the bank. You don't find that those sorts of requests get lost in the call center somewhere and never make it to the people who can make a real difference?
Well, they do, you know. Yeah, we find that, which is why I always get, you know, at this stage when it's still a relatively, you know, small venture, we try to stay on top of it as much as we can and have people tell me when they're making the request. It's a very big problem. I mean, ironically, the training issue for the customer service people, I can't tell you, and I'm telling you the banks are trying. I do not believe in any way this is intentional or they don't want to get the word out. But I would say almost every bank we've dealt with, there'll come a point where someone will call the 800 number and the person won't know what a talking ATM is, even though we've, you know, been in the newspaper in their town. So it is a problem. But, and well, another thing people can do is make the request through the website, to the extent the website is accessible.
Right.
That's probably a better way.
And, of course, because you've been on this case for so long, you have the contacts and can often short-circuit those procedures.
Well, right. For the banks, you know, I have relationships with about probably 10 of the largest institutions here, and for those, it's easier to, like, call me or email me.
What has the cooperation been like between the two major consumer organizations of the blind on this issue?
I would say the cooperation has been good. I think there's a shared interest in talking ATMs, and, you know, our approach, the ACB's approach, has been more negotiating and sitting down with the banks. The NFB has filed a couple of lawsuits, but I'm in, you know, good relationship with both Curtis Chong, who's head of their technology division, and the lawyers who work on this, and we've had a very unified front with the government regulators here in the United States. There hasn't been, you know, it's been very strong, and I think it's really helped the issue, because there's no doubt that the entire community wants this.
Right, because NFB did reach some sort of private settlement with Diebold, I think, that saw NFB itself receiving quite a bit of assistance.
Right, they had a lawsuit with Diebold, and they got some money out of it and some development and some talking ATMs. And, you know, it's one of those things, to tell you the truth, I hope there's somebody listening who might want to write a little thesis on this, because there's been a lot of factors that came together to make this issue work. And I think one of them was the fact that there was not a dispute between the two major consumer groups.
Mm.
And everybody's, you know, there were a lot of steps in the right direction, and, you know, the Access Board here put out, we've had the regulation since 92 that requires independent usability, and in 99 the Access Board put out clarifying regulations to say that means talking ATMs. Now, we feel legally it meant talking ATMs all along, but their boost was very strong. Those regulations are still pending, but we've all supported them, you know, both the ACB and the NFB. So there's a lot of factors.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And when you go to a bank talking about accessible websites, what are you using as your guidelines for access? Do you use the W3C guidelines or the 508 standards? What's there?
We use the W3C.
Right.
Because, you know, the 508 doesn't theoretically apply. I mean, it's a good source of information, and they're good, very good, strong standards. But they don't have to, you know, they don't apply to banks unless the banks are selling the website to the federal government.
Yes.
Which they're not. So it's a little, from a legal perspective, it's better to say the W3C guidelines, because if you go to the 508 guidelines, they can say, well, 508 doesn't apply to us. We don't have to do anything. And it's our view that under the ADA, accessible websites are required. And the standard for accessibility should be the W3C guidelines.
Has anybody actually established that with any kind of case law, the ADA and its applicability to websites?
There hasn't been a lawsuit. Well, the NFB had a lawsuit against AOL.
Yeah, and that was settled out of court, and I was sort of hoping that one way or another it might tell us whether it was applicable or not.
Right. Well, my view is it's always better to actually get the solution and not worry about what the courts are saying if
mm-hmm.
you can help it.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you send an issue to a judge, I don't care how good the judge is, you never know what's going to happen. So I think it's a very positive sign that some of the largest financial institutions in America have committed in settlement agreements. Now, they're private, but they're legally binding settlement agreements. To using the W3C guidelines. And in fact, the more industries or institutions we can point to and say, look, they're doing it. It's not so onerous. It's not so terrible. Call this person inside, and they'll tell you this is something that can be done, and it's good for your customers. So fortunately, we haven't had to put the issue to a court yet.
And, you know, that's a fascinating study in how to get change, isn't it? And I wonder whether we generally, wherever we are around the world, tend to be a bit quick to jump for the legal solution or the complaints process without talking things through with those involved to see if we can make progress that way.
Yeah, well, it's a very fine line, because I think without the sort of background, without the subtext that there could be a lawsuit, we do have a very strong disability civil rights law here in the United States still, even though the Supreme Court's, you know, taken pot shots at it. That made the difference. And once you have that, then I think the first shot should always be discussion, especially with technology issues, because it takes a lot of, you know, give and take. And I really do think the people inside would like to do the right thing if they knew how. And we can show them how. Once you get into a lawsuit, people stop talking to each other.
So what do you think triggered that interest in an ongoing dialogue in the first place? Because so often you hear stories about big corporations coming back and saying, well, our lawyers are bigger than your lawyers and we've got more funds than you have and we'll just keep bleeding you dry until you can't go on.
Well, see, that happens a lot, and that's what you have to watch for. I mean, in this situation, our earliest cases, I worked in most of the cases, I've worked with a private civil rights firm here in the Bay Area that has an exceedingly strong reputation. They have primarily over the years done large, very large employment, race and gender cases. And they were known to the corporate bar. The name of the firm is Saperstein, Goldstein, Nemchek, and Baller, and Linda Dardarian's the partner there that has done these cases with me. And I really think that was a critical factor. Because it wasn't, you know, one of the things that happens is they say, oh, you're just a nonprofit. Sure, we'll set up an advisory committee and work with you. You know, the dreaded advisory committee. But it wasn't about that. It was about, look, this is a serious issue. We're trying to enforce a federal civil rights statute, but we'd rather enforce it in a collaborative way.
Yes, it's scary stuff, isn't it, when all else fails, form a committee and try and bury it that way.
Yeah, well, that's what they do. And there's also this idea, oh, you're a nonprofit, you know, this is your mission, to help us do the right thing. Whereas, meanwhile, they're a multi-million dollar bank. And so I think a critical thing is establishing the, you know, the ground rules at the beginning, that this is a serious matter. We'd rather do it without fighting, but if we have to, we have to. And I'm pleased to say that in this case, when being approached in that way, the banks have all been extremely cooperative.
But why do you think that is? Is it the potential PR damage that could have come from a lawsuit? Although, you know, in this day and age, it seems to me there's quite a strong backlash against the ADA. So did they really have many PR concerns?
Well, you know, I'm not on that side of the table, and I'm not in their heads, but I think it was a combination of, I think they do have PR concerns, and there is a lot of ADA backlash, but most of it has been in the employment context. And in terms of basic access, I still think there's a concern that, well, students...
Oh. We seem to have temporarily lost Lainey there. I don't quite know what happened, but hopefully she will get back in touch with us, because it's a fascinating discussion. And if you would like to speak with us about accessible automatic teller machines and banking services generally, because we are talking about more than just automatic teller machines, then you can give us a call. Our number is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then, courtesy of spiderphone.com, when you're asked to enter a conference code, you should enter 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And we'll be delighted to speak with you about accessible banking services, a subject that's important to all of us. We're actually having, in my country, New Zealand, a discussion about this very subject at the moment, because a code of banking practice is being drawn up where disability isn't mentioned at all. And I think Lainey's back with us now. Isn't technology marvellous?
Yeah. They told me you were disconnecting me, but I didn't believe them.
Well, I don't think I did anything, but it's nice to have you back. Sorry, you were just trying to sort of give some insight into the rationale that might have led to this very amicable dialogue that's gone on.
Well, I mean, I think they, you know, I think they didn't want the bad PR, but also we always try to sell them on the good PR. It's not just that something bad might happen, but this can really be a win-win situation for them. And I think some of them, I mean, Bank of America is running national ads showing a blind woman doing karate. I don't know how many of you have heard about that, but they have these they're running ads in every market in the United States showing this woman doing karate, and she walks out of the karate studio and puts out her cane. You see that she's blind, and the screen says, you know, talking ATMs, ingenuity. So they've really seized the ball and run with it in terms of making it something positive.
Right. So instead of perceiving it to be this onerous expense, this time-consuming annoyance, they're obviously looking at the positive PR spins of compliance.
Right. I'm a big believer in trying to sell corporations on that. because I think it's true. And I also think, you know, there's a lot of people, if you can only get people together at the table, like I said earlier, you know, if only the people making the business decisions can meet some real-life blind people who are Bank America customers or Wells Fargo, Citibank, Union Bank, whatever, and they can hear, oh, you get a bank statement from us every month and you can't read it.
Yeah.
You end up with allies on the inside.
Hmm. Good stuff. We have another call on the line on this matter. We're speaking with Lainey Feingold, and we say hi to area code 832. Good evening to you.
Hi, this is Jim in Houston, Texas.
Hi, Jim. We're coming to see you guys in July.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. I use a bank called NetBank. They say they're the largest internet bank, and pretty good in general for web access, but the problem is with bill payer. There's some screen that seems to be inaccessible. I use Homepage Reader. And I wonder if your guest happens to have contacts there.
I do not. For that kind of thing, if they're basically accessible, I would try the Contact Us page or their 800 line. I mean, we've had really good...
Yeah, I've done that, and nothing seems to happen.
Do they reply to you? Do they come back with any kind of response at all?
Not when I do the email, and when I talk on the phone, they say, yeah, we'll put in the suggestion, but nothing. I kind of get the feeling that the suggestion is going in the circular file, not to the higher-ups. Maybe the other question is, do you know of places that have accessible bill payers online?
Well, you could try, I think, the sites that are the most accessible. I mean, I think Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Fleet, I think their bill pay functionality is pretty good. I mean, we do continue to run into things, but people are using them. I know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems a pity on this NetBank thing, because I think there's just one screen that's not accessible, because when my wife does it, you know, she gets to the screen and then goes on to other things that are all very text-oriented. Should be no problem. But
and you haven't been able to talk to an actual person.
Just the 800 people, but they...
They'll be the call center people. Have you tried sending an email to webmaster at whatever it is? Because that generally guarantees that you're going to talk to the person who puts the website together.
No, I haven't done that. Maybe that's a good idea.
Might be worth a shot, because, you know, and perhaps mention words like, you know, civil rights and ADA and compliance and things like that. I mean, I suppose, and Lainey may have some comments on this, but the trick is always to get the right mix of shall we say, a polite insistence and not being too threatening.
Well, yeah, I definitely agree with that. And the other thing is, if you think that the fix would be pretty easy, just tell them.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, right.
You know, I would just tell them.
Most of the site is accessible. You know, I can look at my account and transactions and everything else, but the bill payer, for some reason, seems to be blocked.
Well, the other thing is, I found when you tell people that a blind person wants to be able to use your website, that's like a mind shift for people. A lot of people don't get the basic concept of how blind people access computers. The idea of software, talking software. You know, you may want to start way back there. You know, I'm a blind person. I use your website because I have software on my home computer. You know, just like basics. And that can sometimes trigger in people's minds, oh, that's how it works. And then if the solution's relatively easy, they want to make it. People get it. People feel, like, excited about it. I know it sounds weird, but... I mean, oh, yeah, that's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So sometimes you have to start further back than you think is necessary.
Good luck with it. If you make some progress, do give us a call and let us know how you get on with that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, see you later. Bye-bye. Yeah, Houston, here we come. Yeah, it's always difficult. I had an interesting experience a few weeks ago, actually, where we're having an election in this country later this year, and I went to all of the major political parties' websites to find out what they had to offer, and probably about three-quarters of them weren't accessible. There were no alt texts or anything like that. And I wrote to all of them, and it was quite interesting to just look at what responses came in, and in some cases, the fact that no response came in, and in one case I got a response back from the party president. So there is a bit of interest out there, and I think you're right. People inherently believe that the internet is a visual medium, and you have to start right back at square one and explain to them how it's done.
Yeah, we've always been, you know, encouraging, obviously, well, bank, large institutions, you know, they should have screen readers in their web department, so people are using them and testing against them. But again, it's just a question of getting in there. You know, there's so much information bombarding people these days, and we just have to make it real. That's the other advantage of not going the legal route. Somehow things get in lawsuits and nothing's real anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about legal arguments and positions. And, yeah.
What do you think the future holds for this particular area, accessible banking? Do you think the majority of the major work is done, or is there still a long way to go?
Well, I think that probably depends if you're like a glass half full and glass half empty type. I think that we've crossed a big hurdle because there's really no turning back that it can be done. The fact that we've gotten 2,300 installed, and, you know, we have legal commitments. Bank of America, for example, has committed to 7,000 by the end of 2005. So we have thousands more already legally committed to. So I think that big hurdle was very significant. There are 300,000 ATMs in the United States, and that's just the United States. As far as I know, Canada, which actually had the first talking ATMs in the world before we got ours, still has a very small number. And Australia, as I was telling you before we got on air here, either is about to have some or has a very small number. And I think that's it internationally. So there is a long way to go. But I think if, you know, now we know they can do it. So it's up to people demanding what we know can be done and staying on top of the technology developments, as the earlier caller said.
Do you think that the question of how many blind people live in a given state or even a given country can and does make a difference in terms of the degree to which banks are willing to comply?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have tried very hard to argue the irrelevance of that. But that comes up a lot. You know, well, there's no blind people living here. And I think on the early machines, it is important to focus in on, like the other caller said, areas where there's going to be more blind people, you know, urban centers or public transportation routes, universities. But like I'm saying to the banks, you know, when I talk about the information in Braille, you know, they have a lot of really complex documents. And they'll say, well, nobody ever wants to read these anyways, whether they're sighted or not. And I say, you have to think of your crankiest customer and think of them as blind. And that's why you have all that detail. You have it for some reason. Someone's reading it. Same with location. I mean, the fact that it's a small incidence shouldn't matter because it's every individual person's civil rights to have the access. Well, and the other thing is, there's a whole group of people who, you know, this has all been an effort of the blindness community. It all started with the CCB chapter out here in California. But I think there's a very big potential market with these things for people with learning disabilities and other people who have difficulty reading a screen, not just because they're blind, but for whatever reason. So I think the numbers, we have to be careful not to say it only is important for blind people.
Yes, I think you may have mentioned that in your forum article, and that caught my attention because obviously if you can grow the market, as it were, and then it becomes a more attractive proposition, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, the numbers are never kind of, I don't know, I think it's dangerous for us to be saying, well, there's a business case for it, or wait till there's a business case, or it matters that there's a business case, because it is a civil right. And I think it will make it easier for institutions to do it if more people use them, but we don't want to find ourselves acting like it matters. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it's the principle.
how many people use them. But I would love to be getting the word out more to the learning disability community and other groups. But like anything else, you know, it's just a matter of time and education.
Now, the banks presumably keep statistics about who accesses the machines for security reasons apart from anything else. Are they able to track how many blind people are using these, or more to the point, how many people are using the talking facilities of the machine? So some sort of security thing register when they plug a headset into the machine?
Some of the banks are doing that, and it's not just plugging in the headset. Some of the keys are only used in a certain way when the machine is in its talking mode, so that's what they're counting. So yes, they know exactly how many, they have the ability to know exactly how many talking ATM transactions there are for any particular function. And again, you know, this has been the argument about usage. It's very important to remember that when ATMs first came on the scene in the 70s, the institutions spent enormous amounts of time and money getting people used to the idea of getting their money out of a machine. I mean, it was a big cultural shift. And we have not seen that kind of money going into the talking ATM effort. And until it does, I really don't think it's right for institutions to be counting.
Are the stats very flattering? I mean, are there more people than you would have expected using them?
Well, I don't like to talk about this because I don't buy them. But like I say, until there's a machine at every place, and, you know, using an ATM to get money is a cultural shift. And blind people, like anybody else, they've established other patterns. And I read an interview that the Smithsonian did with the inventor, the patent holder for the ATM itself, and he was just talking about how they would stand at the doors of every branch and greet people and walk them over to the machine, show them how to use it, tell them why it's a good thing. And, you know, we haven't seen any of that, although Bank America, hats off to them because they really are trying to do some outreach. So the statistics, I don't think we should be dealing with them at this point.
Fair enough. Let's go to a call from area code 248 for Lainey Feingold. Hello there.
Hello. My name is Chuck, and I'm calling in from Michigan. And I work in the banking industry. I work in the information technology department for a bank that's pretty national at this point. What I was wondering is, if I want to point my ATM department in the right direction and how to get started with this or get information in this, what do I need to do? Who do I send them to talk to?
That's a good question. You know, Greg Vanderheiden, who I'm sure all your listeners know, has been our consultant throughout this effort, and really the effort wouldn't have happened without him. And he's at Trace Research and Development Center in Wisconsin. So that's like one thing. I would encourage you to call me, you know, offline, and I can give you some more information. There are people nationally at both all the major ATM developers, the manufacturers, NCR, Diebold, Triton, Fujitsu, they all have a national point person on this issue. And I know all those people. And, you know, I'm happy to talk to institutions that call me. I have to say, most institutions don't. But unfortunately, it's not, you know, there's not like one source of information. There's not a website that says talking ATMs, everything you need to know. But their own manufacturers, whatever, like your bank probably has NCR, Diebold, their own local sales reps should be able to help them.
Okay.
I mean, that's really the easiest thing to do.
That's kind of what I was trying to figure out was, you know, because I'm gonna call them and say, hey, you know, because they've been real good with me about, you know, whenever they put a new ATM in either where I work or in my immediate neighborhood, of telling me what, you know, what the menu structure is and everything, and that's been real positive for me. But I'm thinking, well, you know, I know they don't have them, and I'd kind of like to see them head in that direction. So I'm trying to, my idea was to, you know, get some information for them and call them and say, hey, have you talked to so-and-so?
Right. Well, all the local sales reps should know. And you know the other thing that's good to do is encourage people to use them. You do not have to be blind to use a talking ATM.
Sure.
And that's another, like, light bulb goes off. When people see what it really is, they say, oh, this is really something we should do. It's kind of neat. I swear I've heard a lot of bankers say that. So I would encourage, you know, find the location that's closest to either where you are or where somebody in corporate headquarters are. And best yet is have them go down there with a blind person. If there's anybody.
Yeah.
That
well,
kind of thing makes a difference.
And with you on the inside, it could make a bit of a difference if you're working. Yeah.
That was my whole point. Yeah. Was, you know, I could really make this, you know, happen and
yeah.
as far as getting them to do it or even, you know, get them interested in making it happen. Because, you know, our national headquarters is in Chicago, and I've seen tons of articles about the immediate Chicago area getting, you know, the talking ATMs, and I'm kind of forwarding these emails along and thinking no one's really seeing them, so I thought, well, I could get a little more proactive about making it happen, so that's kind of why I wanted to know where, you know, where to get the information for them to even check it out and get them started on it, so at least we can find out, hey, if our local sales rep knows about them, great. If he doesn't, then or she doesn't, then let's find out how to get that information to them so that they're aware. So that's good. I'm glad to
Best of luck with that. I hope you make some progress.
Oh, I plan to.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, anyone who's out there who's listening, you or anyone else, I do try to, you know, sort of keep up nationally. I'm happy to say that it's a little harder now because there are more independent efforts like the kind you're suggesting, but we do like to try to know, you know, who's doing what, and that's one of the reasons that there's been cooperation between us and the NFB on this, because I've really been a big believer in sharing information, and everybody should know which banks are doing it, so people should feel free if they have local efforts to let me know.
My shirt certainly will do that.
Marvelous. Thank you for that, and I wish you the best with it.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, just about to wrap up here. One question I had was relating to vandalism. Do you get reports of people sticking gum or something in the headphone socket, and is that often cited as an excuse for not proceeding?
Well, that's a good question. Originally it was. Before they were in, that was something people were worried about, or they'd break off, or someone would jam a pencil in there. But it hasn't been a problem. I will say that the earphones, we do not have them available at the ATMs just out because they would be stolen. So people have to request them inside a branch or request the earphones through the 800 number. But like I say, they work with a standard Walkman earphone.
Right. Most people would have.
That would be the only kind of vandalism. There hasn't been any other problems that we've seen.
It's a really exciting development that makes such a practical difference in people's lives, and congratulations for all the work that you've done. And you have got an article published in, was it the January Forum or February?
February.
February Forum. So that's online for people to look at the acb.org site. And maybe we could give your email address one more time if people wish to get in touch.
Sure, and it's also at the bottom of that article. But
great.
It's L Feingold, it's F like Frank, E-I-N, G-O-L-D, at california.net.
That's great. And I know you've got dinner in the process of being prepared, so it's very good of you to give up your time, and it's been most informative.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. Bye for now.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Slaney Feingold, and she has been speaking with us about automatic teller machines. This is Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream, and we're going to go into an open forum part of the program now. So if you'd like to give us a call, you're most welcome to do that. Area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked to enter a conference code, it's 0480-5512. It's 0480-5512. Interesting thing about the ATMs, isn't it? Now we just got to have some money to take out of them. Well, It's been a wee while since we've had an open forum, a good 2 or 3 weeks, so there may be things on your mind that you want to raise. There's been something sitting on my Braille note that I wanted to look at for the last little while, too. It's one of those things that makes your blood boil, but I thought I'd share it with you. You may have seen the article around anyway. But this comes from the Times. It was done in mid-February, and it's the headline is "Payout Victory for Woman Who Did Not Want Baby." This is not the National Enquirer, you know. This is the Times of London, and it says a woman who is virtually blind won a landmark court victory yesterday for damages to help bring up her baby, a baby boy born after a failed sterilization operation. Karina Reese, age 30, is now expected to receive a six-figure sum after 2 out of 3 Court of Appeal judges accepted that her case broke a legal principle that healthy children were always a blessing and parents could not be compensated even if the birth resulted from medical negligence. Lady Justice Hale said the case raised novel and important issues and was the first wrongful birth case which involved a disabled mother bringing up a healthy child. Ruling that Miss Reese should be granted compensation for the extra costs of bringing up her son, whose name is Anthony, she said the court could only imagine the difficulties she faced in caring for her son because of her severe visual impairment. We know that the claimant is bringing up Anthony herself, with the help of her mother and other relatives who live nearby. We have been told that she does not cook because she feels it to be too dangerous, but she does try to dress him. Lady Justice Hale said a handicapped parent would need help feeding, bathing, clothing, training, supervising, playing with, reading, and taking their child to school. Miss Reese, who was born with the genetic disorder retinitis pigmentosa, is blind in her left eye and only has 1/6 of normal vision in her right. Robin de Wilde, QC, her counsel, had told the Court of Appeal that she had wanted to be sterilized because of her visual handicap, which made her doubt her ability to cope with a baby. In earlier test cases, the House of Lords ruled that healthy parents who made a similar claim after a failed sterilization were not entitled to damages for the cost of bringing up their healthy child. Giving the court's 2-1 majority ruling yesterday, Lady Justice Hale said that the law had limited a doctor's responsibility because of the incalculable benefit a child was presumed to bring. However, she said if that incalculable benefit is put at risk by the very fact which led the parent to ask for the sterilization, there is nothing unfair, unjust, or unreasonable in holding that the surgeon assumes a more extensive responsibility for the consequences. Miss Reese of Darlington, Durham, underwent a sterilization at the Darlington Memorial Hospital in 1995, but one of her fallopian tubes was not fully tied, and in October 1996, she realized she was pregnant. The hospital admitted the sterilization was negligently performed, but said the compensation should be limited to a modest sum for suffering and losses caused by her unwanted pregnancy and labor. In a dissenting judgment, Lord Justice Waller said, "I believe ordinary people would think that it would not be fair that a disabled person should recover damages when mothers who may in effect become disabled by ill health through having a baby child would not. Rather, having a healthy child would not." So that's the article. Now, what do you think of that? I mean, obviously, the woman concerned has not received appropriate rehabilitation services in terms of cooking, and I understand that in another article I was reading about the same issue, that her friends say how difficult it is. She puts the baby's shoes on the wrong feet, and changing nappies or diapers is difficult, all of those things. Goodness gracious me, you sort of wonder what that does for those of us who are trying to get the message out that blind people are capable parents. When someone reads that, it certainly enforces some pretty negative stereotypes. So you may have some comments on that subject. But I mean, you just got to wonder. You really got to wonder. Let's go to area code 559 now. Hi, this is Blind Line.
I think, hi, this is Dave. I think they should, they've thought about sterilizing the wrong person. I think Karina's mother is the one who should have been sterilized.
Well, that's rather harsh,
but...
Well, it's a dreadful story, isn't it? I mean, to think that that's happening in 21st century Britain.
Yeah, my daughter would have apoplexy if she heard about it. She's now 23, so I think she considers herself fairly well raised. Now, I will say that I could not. We used mostly cloth diapers, and I couldn't fold those stupid things to save my soul. But my wife did so, and she left them there. And if you know, if she needed to change, I could change them. I could do the pins. I just couldn't fold the stupid things. But I know a lot of sighted guys that couldn't. Or
well, that's precisely the point. It's not because you're blind. It's because you're a useless male.
Yeah, right.
Like
well,
me.
You know, I got them changed anyway. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But seriously, you know that flies in the face of everything that any of us are sitting out there trying to do.
Yes.
You know, trying to get ourselves, make ourselves independent, and especially, you know, when I don't even know what to say. But so much of the stuff seems to come out of Europe, this right to birth nonsense. They've been doing that for quite a long time now. There's been a thing, I think, was it France, was it, where they're having some problem, some issue over some retarded children that were... not supposed to be born, so they're going to get paid for it.
Well,
I have a great idea. Let's all ask for recompense because, you know, all of us probably have had in the ancient past. You know how back in biblical times, and they had handicapped babies. They probably threw them into the river, and you know, on a basket or something. I'm sure every one of us has had a relative or two. That was in that situation. Why don't we call our governments and ask for compensation for that?
Yes, well, she's obviously able enough and intelligent enough to make the decision to actually commit the act in the first place to get pregnant. Presumably that was it wasn't consensual. So yeah, I just find it. I showed it to my wife, you know, and she was. I couldn't even tell you what she said. It was just. It's when you come up against people who seek to undermine you as a parent simply by virtue of the fact that you're blind, and then you read these sorts of articles, you know where it comes from. But I don't actually blame the woman concerned. I just want to know how come the rehab system in Britain got so slack that it obviously didn't pick up on this woman and teach her how to cook and to change nappies and all those things.
Let me offer a thought, and I'm being perfectly serious now. You say she's totally blind in one eye and has some vision out the other.
Yeah.
I'm gonna step back a little bit. My ex-spouse happens to be in pretty much that same predicament, although the vision in the one eye is pretty good. I would say not excellent, but okay, about 20/60, 20/70, depending on the day and what she's wearing, contact or glasses or whatever.
Yeah.
Yet she went through life as a sighted person. Really having nothing whatever to do with blindness, blind people, or blind anything.
Yes.
Until I came along, and I absolutely upset her apple cart big time, and her family. Her family never did accept me, ever. In 16 years of our marriage, they never accepted me. And I think that, this is my Dave McElroy theory, which may or may not have any validity, but I think when a person has some vision out of one eye like that, I think that, and I don't know, it even seems different if they got partial vision in both eyes, or that doesn't even seem, but it appears that they make such an effort to utilize that,
yeah,
that it just, they just try to ignore the fact they have a vision problem, whatever. Now, why that is, I'll never know.
Oh, I know why it is. Well, I think I know why it is. And I know exactly what you're saying, because when I've been doing some work training people, and you go and see them, and they're sitting at their work desk, and they've got Zoom text and a really large monitor, and they've got, you know, huge amounts of magnification going on, and it might take them 90 seconds to read the average email, and you sort of try and gently say to them, do you realize that you could read the same email in about 15 seconds using synthetic speech, that you wouldn't feel so tired and painful at the end of the day through all the eye strain that comes from straining to see what's on the screen. But you see, it's because there's this image, this attitude, that the sighted way is the superior way, and it doesn't really matter about outcomes, it doesn't really matter about logic. It's clinging on to that concept of normality, of sightedness.
Jonathan, when I came into this woman, into my ex's life, I mean, her parents were just so... I've seen a lot of people in my life who've never seen a blind person, you know, get a little bit, you know, get freaky, but...
Yep.
Her parents absolutely were apoplectic. It was unreal to see. To this day, I have never seen anybody act like they did. And, you know, it was like, I must have been, you know, I must have just put it in their face that what they believed but didn't want to say for years and years and years. And all of a sudden, you know, here it was, you know, hoppy boppy, then white cane, and hi, you know.
Yep.
And it was very strange. But I'm sure that's a good part of why, you know, why we're not together today, because she just, you know, she wasn't even, but I don't know, I'm just wondering if this lady was the same way, just had to be normal and just plain wasn't.
It's difficult to know, but you would think, I mean, the hospital must have been absolutely terrified of bad PR or something, because any lawyer worth his or her salt working for that hospital would have got a blindness agency in, or even any self-respecting organization of the blind in the world, to come in and say blindness is not a barrier to being a damn good parent. And, you know, why on earth the hospital just didn't offer that defense, I have no idea.
But if she wasn't blind, you know, and to her, she wasn't blind, and they wouldn't do it. They never, my ex-wife, congenital cataract, 5 operations, they knew there was a vision problem. And in 48 years, nobody's ever gone to her and said, gee, we could make this easier for you. No, I think not.
Yeah, fair comment.
Sad, but I think these particular individuals fall into a crevice that even the low vision people can't know and can't experience. I suspect she never really thought about it until she had this baby, and that was it.
Yes, it's tough for those people who feel that they don't fit properly into either world. It's tough.
Into any world.
Yeah.
I mean, either world, at least you've got a low vision, but if you're not blind but you're not fully sighted, yet you don't feel you fit in the low vision world either, where does that put you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you, I'm sure there has to be other callers in this, but I'm saddened by the whole thing, and I just hope it doesn't get too much airplay.
Thanks for your call, Dave.
Thanks.
Okay, bye now. Taking your calls on Blind Line, it's an open forum for the rest of the show. Hi, area code 631.
Good evening, sir.
It's Richard again. How are you, Richard?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. I see the world has not stopped being Looney Tune as far as the article goes. I mean, it's sad, and I really don't have any much to add to what the last person said. I think it, in a way it's very sad, and you're right, it is scary when on the one hand we say, okay, we need help, you know, there are things that we would need help probably as a parent, no doubt about it, but to say out and out that we can't do it, I mean, that's just doesn't fly in the ointment.
Yeah, you know, and it really makes me wonder about how it will be for parents, for especially blind mothers, in hospitals in Britain from now on, when they give birth and they're going to be faced with all of these patronizing medical people who will have read that article and have come to the conclusion that blindness prohibits you from being a good parent. And, you know, I wonder whether there are mothers or parents generally who are listening who would like to comment on this, because I've heard all sorts of stories about how hospitals have sort of quite bluntly questioned a blind parent's rights or ability in terms of being a parent.
Well, never mind a blind person. How about somebody in a wheelchair?
Yeah.
You know, I mean that's even more. I mean, really, that's even more. Okay, if you can, you know, move around, you can definitely. But someone in a wheelchair, how is someone in a wheelchair going to take care of a child that's going to be crawling around and all?
I know some of those wheelies are pretty quick, man. But in all of the research that I've read, there has been quite a lot of evidence that suggests that blindness is the most feared disability out of all disabilities.
Yeah, I know. We had talked about this before.
Yeah.
And in reality, it's not. When you do the role playing and all.
Yeah.
Just as another point, how do you feel as far as ACB Radio Interactive and all, and doing the streaming and all, especially what's been happening with the industry, as we know, maybe Live 365 is close to being dead.
How do I feel about that?
How do you think it's going to affect ACB and
It's an additional cost that we will have to bear. Based on current projections, it won't be an issue for us. I mean, we will be able to meet those costs. We now have sponsorship, and we'll be bringing more sponsors on board, so we should be able to cover those costs. But ACB Radio aside, so I just want to assure people that it's all full steam ahead for us. But ACB Radio aside, I think the question really at issue here is one of fairness, and it seems to me that the CARP ruling, which is currently being discussed at the moment, is based on a fundamentally wrong set of values, which is that somehow when you broadcast over the internet, you are not broadcasting in the true sense of the word, but making an absolute digital facsimile of what you're sending out. And in the case of streaming, that's just not true. If you're listening to something, certainly at, say, 24K mono, but even at 56K stereo, you're not getting a complete digital facsimile. And in the case of the model that many radio stations use, when you've got announcers talking over the top of songs and that sort of thing, it's more like radio than a digital facsimile. So I think what they really should have done, and hopefully what they will do in the end once this consultation period is up, is go to a percentage of revenue model, so that those who are not really in it for the money aren't totally blown out of the business, and that those who are in it for the money are given a chance to grow, and they pay more as their business grows.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious about what you thought on that, because it seems like it's going to be somewhat of a reality, and there have been quite a few changes already. Some of the free sites have already been to paid subscription now.
Well, I'm hopeful that it won't be a reality. I mean, it could be, but obviously that consultation period's going on. Even the National Association of Broadcasters put out a press release at the end of last week condemning the current proposals. If people want to keep up with this, they should go to www.saveinternetradio.org, and there's a lot of information there. But obviously we've been running promos on Interactive warning people about what's being proposed, and we urge people to write to their congressmen, to the president, anyone they can think of, telling them that the current regime being proposed is unreasonable.
Yeah. Okay, Jonathan.
Good on you, Richard. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
Bye now. Bye. Let's see what we've got here. Whoa, look at this. We have another area code 631, so we'll take that on the air. Hi, this is Blind Lion.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Nick, and it never fails.
What's that?
Two Long Islanders call in a row.
Good on you.
I cannot believe it.
That's marvelous.
And, by the way, I just called in and told you that, actually, I'd like to build on a point that Richard raised.
Yep.
Hey, in no way is there such a thing as a digital facsimile of a word. There's no way. Even at 360 kilobits per second streaming, which you don't see too often, they still can't call that a digital facsimile of a word. It's a word. And it just sounds too much like radio to be stopped. It sounds better than radio.
Yeah, I mean, technically, it would be possible in the future, particularly with formats that may be eventually emerging. As broadband gets broader and lossless compression gets better, we will probably eventually reach a point where if you send audio over the net, say from a CD, that you'll get an exact reproduction, but we're not there yet, and there are artifacts with any real media or MP3 codec. So I think that's just a misconception that the CARP people are under, and I hope that the submission process will clarify that for them.
You know what MP3 codec I like for streaming? Radium. I like radium.
Well, radium's a hack of Fraunhofer. The Fraunhofer is very good, yes.
Yes, but I want to go higher than 56 kilobits per second if I want to do anything of the such.
Yes.
I want to go higher than 56 kbps, and the only way for me to do that is Go Radio.
No, well, there are other ways. You could buy the Fraunhofer Professional MP3 codec, which is legal, but radium is certainly a way of doing it, if you don't mind using the illegal hack.
I've also got, with my Sound Blaster Audigy, the creative MP3 codec.
Yep.
Which I haven't seen work in action before because I only just found it. But, and of course, you always still have a lame ACM in out there. It's out there.
Well, yes. I'm not a huge fan of lame at low bit rates, but some people use it.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I just wanted to tell you something weird that's been happening over the past few weeks, especially ever since I've upgraded to XP. The weirdest things that have been happening, WinApp and Windows XP, the combination makes the whole machine go kaflooey. Whenever I open WinApp, almost every resource is taken up.
What screen reader are you using?
JAWS.
That's why. Doesn't happen with WindowEyes Professional.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, have no idea why that is, but
you think it's a memory issue?
I don't know what the issue is, but it's certainly an issue with JAWS and WinAmp, no doubt about that, because when I use WindowEyes Professional, it's sweet as.
What do you, what kind of setup are you using for XP?
I'm running XP Home Edition.
On a laptop, a desktop?
Yeah, on a laptop.
Okay. Speaking of computers, what happened? I hear that you were supposed to get a Pentium 4 for Christmas.
Oh, that's coming. I've put that off for a wee bit longer, but it's on the drawing board. Should be here in the next 2 or 3 months, probably.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I hope it's going to be as fast as anything. AMDs because they're not memory suckers.
Yeah, well, it's a 2 gig machine.
Yeah, but I like AMD computers because they're not memory suckers.
Yeah, I wouldn't use AMD if you paid me to.
Why?
Because there are too many compatibility problems.
Like?
Oh, when you use certain MIDI synthesizers, different things, they're designed specifically to take advantage of elements in Intel processors, and they just don't go.
Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. My XP machine that I'm sitting right in front of is an AMD. And I'm not having much in the way of problems, although XP messed up my Sound Blaster Audigy. Right now, what happens is, it's kind of hard to describe, but I need to tell you this, because I want to know if you might be able to, if you've seen this, but whenever I play like a little clicky sound over, like, for example, my Eloquence, the Eloquence goes on the Fritz. Like, the fidelity goes lower, and your ears just keep going, like, it keeps bouncing up, down, in the fidelity when you have these clicks going. And this didn't happen when I got the Audigy and was using it with Millennium at the first time. Now, one thing that also is XP might be causing, XP may not be causing, but the FireWire port on the Audigy drive also will not work. Because we were installing the drivers, and it said that there was a problem with the FireWire. And XP has just turned everything topsy-turvy. But one thing that XP did do for me, and I'm really, really happy about this one, my broadband connection is flying. It's faster than ever.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, I don't know what would be causing those things. I've heard all sorts of people complaining about the creative drivers for XP, so it may be a driver issue.
Ah, I want to see the Microsoft native drivers. I always liked Microsoft native drivers for any new operating system.
Well, that may be why then, because it could be that the driver you're using is a WDM driver.
Which it is.
Right.
No, well, creative it is.
So that will explain your fidelity issue.
WDM.
Yeah.
And also, there's one other thing that I'm having a problem with. DeckTalk Access 32 will not automatically start up for XP. And when I do put it in the startup directory and have Run JAWS first on startup as well, it causes a problem. So something is going on the fritz with that DeckTalk too. But I'm going to have... So now I know what to go look for. An anti-WDM driver for this Audigy.
Yep, get rid of the WDM.
Okay, I'll...
All right.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
You really helped me there.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. See you later.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go continue to the phones. Hi, this is Blind Line.
Hi, this is Jim in Houston.
Hi, Jim.
Let's see. A couple things.
Yeah.
First, I think that anyone who gets a poor operation from a doctor should get compensated.
Well, I agree.
Not just...
I agree entirely. It's too stressful.
I don't know... Yeah, I mean, how the Lord says, you know, it's great to have babies no matter what, but that's pretty stupid, I think.
Well, yeah, I have a lot of sympathy with that view. I mean, if somebody, you know, has had a sterilization operation and then they actually conceive, then somebody has messed up. And so,
yeah.
As you say, the blindness shouldn't come into it.
No, right. The other thing I hope is that... she was exaggerating her disability just to make a good case and get lots of money out of somebody, you know.
Well, maybe, but certainly in other articles I've read, you know, her friends are saying how difficult it is for this woman to, you know, put shoes on the baby's correct feet and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I was a parent of 5 children, and yeah, of course things like that are so easy. It's
yeah.
Hard to believe someone who could make love could... get the left and right shoes mixed up.
Yeah.
Let's see, kind of changing subject. I'm interested in this kind of thing. Like at work or at church and other places, you're going along and you're passing somebody, and I guess the first possible strategy would be to say hi pretty much to everyone. So that's... This is up for discussion from you and others. I don't really know what the right answer should be, and I think it depends on the situation, basically, but what the guidelines should be. You know, like if you know most of the people in the building, should you say hi to everybody?
I see what you mean. Shouldn't they just say hi to you?
Yeah, well, that's the next question. Often they won't, I guess, and then, you know, because they know you're blind or something. I don't know why they don't. and then the other... connected to this is, if someone says hi to you, should you say, who are you? Or just say hi and keep walking. And,
yeah.
That's
a tricky one. It's especially when you get these dorks who come up and say, guess who this is? You know, and that just goes on and on, and I just say, look, I'm...
And then should sighted people be expected even to say, you know, this is Bill or whatever? I know when some people do that, I appreciate it. On the other hand, you know, we're the blind people, we're the unusual ones. We should probably know what to do and what to recommend and what to do, because you can't expect sighted people who only rarely meet a blind person to be experts and do the right thing.
Difficult, isn't it? Difficult. And, you know, I just...
Because either way, it's very awkward. If you ask who you are, it's kind of awkward. If you just say hi and keep walking, they probably think to themselves, he said hi, but I know damn well he doesn't even know who I am. And
with the guessing game thing, I've just got to the point where I say, look, I'm happy to talk to you. If you want to tell me who you are, that's fine, but I'm not playing games.
Right.
But I know what you mean. And sometimes it works the other way. Somebody who you know really well, like you've met them every day for 20 years or something, says, hi, it's so-and-so, and you know that's so-and-so, and you sort of think, well...
Yeah, that's the other extreme. Then you feel condescending if they tell you when you knew anyway.
So, look, you know...
I've had strange things. Like, I went to a meeting once, and someone said hi, and I said, who are you? And he said, it's your wife.
Oh, no.
Because a hi gives you very little information. It's such a short word, and if it's a little noisy... whatever. One thing I do, a little trick, is I say, hi, how are you, to get them to talk some more.
Yeah, I do that.
And sometimes that gives me enough information to find out who they are.
Sometimes I just have to come clean, you know, and I say, look, I'm sorry, but who is this?
Yeah.
Right. Who are you?
See, obviously, you know, if they stop and start, then you better find out who it is.
Yes.
But it's
tricky.
I find it frequent and perplexing. What kind of problem? When to say what and so on. I wonder if either you or the listeners have some opinions on an approach to that.
Maybe we will hear other people's strategies for dealing with that problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Have a good one, Jim.
You too.
Okay,
bye,
bye now. Oh, yes, we're going to Houston. We're going to... Hello, this is Blindline.
Hi, Jonathan. TC here.
How are you getting on?
Oh, I'm getting on pretty good. I've been busy. I've been talking to some people on Pal Talk, and through them I've downloaded a little voice email program called Talk Sender.
Oh, yeah. What does it do?
That's kind of tricky. I had to have my mother help me with that, but, I mean, the only thing, it's all graphical, and there's no way to, y'all won't read what the graphics are, even if you have screen echo on all. But what I did was, she kind of told me when I was on the record graphic, and I had to, I don't care what anybody else says, I have to memorize those graphic numbers. The record graphic is graphic 528, and then the stop button is, it changes for some reason. Sometimes it's graphic 182, and sometimes it's graphic 470, but at least those, the record, stop, play, and send are all in a row next to each other.
When you put
I memorized those four graphic numbers.
When you put your JAWS cursor on the graphic, you could always just bring up the graphics labeler and label the graphic, and then it will speak it from then on.
Well, not that one. That one it wouldn't. I mean, when I turned the graphics labeler on, it moved to another graphic. I mean, it just moved to another graphic, period.
I don't mean the automatic graphics one. I mean the one where you can actually manually bring up the edit box and type in the name of the graphic.
Well, I tried to do that.
Oh.
I mean, and it moved, you know.
It moved.
It either changed that graphic to a different number or it moved to another graphic. I'm not sure.
Oh, well then, yeah, sounds like you've obviously got no choice then but to try and remember those numbers.
Yeah, and you know, I tried using the Wimba mail. This man that I talked to, he's real nice. He's in your neck of the woods. He's in New Zealand.
And, oh, is he?
And he's got a woman, a friend who's in Chicago, and she uses a Wimba program. I could read hear all the messages from the Incredimail and Talk Sender and Wimba, but Wimba, unfortunately, when it goes to sending it, that Microsoft install on demand comes up, and it won't. Forms mode will come on for just a second, and then it turns off, and then there's nothing there but record, but a little line saying record your message, and I can't because the forms mode doesn't stay on long enough for the buttons to be there, you know.
Yeah, man, you have been adventurous looking at all these. What about good old Pure Voice? That's a good voicemail recording program, and it's very accessible.
Well, I don't know. I think that was on the Eudora CD, but I didn't install it when I installed Eudora, and I'm not even using Eudora right now, and you know, because I thought, well, darn, probably not anybody is even using that.
Yeah,
so
you can...
I didn't install it when I installed Eudora, so, you know, I don't want to go through the install process with the Eudora CD. I'm not even using that now. I'm using Outlook Express, and... I've forgotten a whole lot of stuff about Eudora.
Bing, 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 bing,
I mean,
bing, bing.
You know.
You can download Pure Voice separately from the Eudora website, and other people do use it. And it's actually surprisingly old for these sorts of programs. I think it came out maybe 5 or 6 years ago, but it still does a pretty good job, actually.
Oh, is the website www.purevoice.com?
Just go to eudora.com, and somewhere there they have the Pure Voice program for download.
Is it the 3W or just Eudora.com?
I think either one will work. Certainly www.eudora.com works.
Well, I guess I'll try and see how many people are using it. Well, I was going to try and at least download Incredimail, but Talk Sender keeps coming up whenever I start my computer, and I don't know what to do to get it to stop. There's no way I can I do it from the system tray. I've tried bringing it up in the system tray and entering on it and pressing the right mouse button, and there's no menus there.
Oh, man.
Except cut, copy, paste, and things like that. But there's no option there that says to take it out of the system tray so it won't start whenever your computer starts.
Yes.
You know. And I'm afraid if I download IncrediMail, then I'll have the same problem, and then they'll cancel each other out, and I'll have a legal operation problem.
Well, this is the dilemma. I guess I haven't really gotten terribly much into voice emails, apart from I've used Pure Voice a few times, and that does the job nicely, and it's got very good access, good function keys, and if you can't remember the function keys, there's standard pull-down menus and buttons you can tab to, and it all talks. It's beautiful.
Well, I guess I'll have to try that sometime. I just wish I could get Talk Center to quit coming up on whenever I start my computer, but so far nobody's told me how to do that yet.
Oh dear.
You know.
Well, best of luck with it, and no doubt we'll talk with you in subsequent weeks.
Okay.
Have a nice evening.
Okay, okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Area code 408. Hi, this is Blindline.
Hi there. This is Mary from Santa Fe.
How are you, Mary?
Friend.
Yeah. I know. I was wondering when you'd ring me. I was wondering if I'd ever have the courage to tell you that I couldn't hold out in the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, when I started working, I just didn't seem to have the energy I used to have.
Oh.
And so one night I said to Amanda, I'm really sorry, but I gotta have a roast dinner, a full roast dinner.
Well, it happens sometimes.
I have sinned. I mean, I feel bad about it morally, but the fact is I just felt so listless. Listless.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was on holiday, it was fine, but boy, I think it's because I actually keep a fairly robust schedule, you know, like,
Uh-huh.
And I just felt really awful. But I'm sure that's not what you rang about, though.
No, but, I guess sometimes it works out for some people and sometimes it doesn't, so.
I wish I had the willpower, but I don't.
Well, anyway, I had a couple of pieces of information to share with folks that might be of help.
Yes.
A couple of things that, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I sent you an email about Opticon repair.
Oh, goodness, you did. I'm so grateful you rang in because I kept meaning to mention it. Go ahead.
Yeah, there is a place where you can get an Opticon fixed, and at least I do have an email address here so that if anybody wants to, they can inquire. The man's name is Richard, I don't know how to say, O-E-H-M. He used to work for Telesensory.
Yep.
And he runs a company called, I'm going to pronounce it, Ohm Electronics. I don't know how to say that name.
Yeah, it might be OEM. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. But anyway, he does repair Opticons, and he used to work for Telesensory. So if anybody would like information about that or just to email him and ask questions about it, then they can. Can I give out the email address on the air?
Please do.
Okay, it's OEHMELEC, that's all one word, @TDL.com.
Okay, want to give that one more time?
Okay, OEHMELEC @TDL.com.
Great.
And he's in San Jose. I was thinking of Steve Matsura. I think he was the one who was asking about this originally. I think it was on one of the programs that's on Monday nights. He was asking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and then...
Snowman.
Snowman, yes, the snowman. Yeah. Oh, yes.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that there is a store chain here, grocery store chain, that is now doing home delivery of groceries.
Great.
And it's a Safeway chain, which I think is pretty much a national grocery chain here in this country. And they just started it probably a few days ago. And now I think it's only effective in California, Washington, and Oregon. But if people want to check it out and see if they're delivering in their area, they can go to Safeway.com. That's Safeway. And I tried this yesterday. I got on the website. It takes a little bit of fooling around to figure it out, but it's pretty basic. And they'll deliver within a 2-hour window that you pick. And I had some fresh fruit and stuff delivered today. It was wonderful.
So the site's reasonably accessible, is it?
It's reasonably accessible. You have to, as I said, they've got all kinds of frames, so you've got to be able to navigate frames pretty well.
Mind you, in some ways that's quite a blessing with some of those shopping sites, because you can quickly bring up your frame list if your screen reader supports lists of frames and navigate to the trolley, you know.
Yeah, and JAWS, you just kind of flip around F6 or Shift F6, whatever you want to do.
And NZF9 will actually bring up a list of frames in JAWS, so you can then arrow up and down through and push enter on the frame you want.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. There's a bit of free advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great, you know. It's so liberating to be able to peruse the shelves at your leisure. And when we had our first shopping site that did that here, I just could not believe how much choice sighted people have and probably take for granted all these different cereals and breads and...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I actually took charge of the shopping when my son was born. And... Uh-huh. Bought all sorts of goodies. Went to the delicatessen section and brought all the nice cheeses and all the yummy chalky biscuits. And my other children said to my wife, "Why can't Daddy do the shopping every week?" And my wife said, "Because we'd be bankrupt in no time."
Yeah.
But it's liberating. So that's good. So that's Safeway.com, and it's reasonably usable with speech.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. Well, I think one of the fun parts of it is you get to find out how all the brand names are spelled.
Yeah.
You know, like there's one here called Knudsen that has dairy products, and I finally found out, oh, it's Knudsen.
Oh, you'd never pick that. Yes. And do you get information about the ingredients? Do they give you some stuff about what's on the label?
I couldn't figure out how to do that. There's no direct link on the item itself. It mostly just gives the item and the size and the price. So you kind of have to know what you want.
Yeah.
But since it's relatively new, they're probably going to improve it somewhat.
Well, hopefully people will take the time to write and say, you know, I'm a blind person and your site is usable and please keep it that way. Because, gee, those things are so useful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. All good stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's neat to share this kind of stuff because, you know, people are going to be able to use it.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, have a wonderful week and keep in touch.
Okay.
Okay. Bye now. There we go. This is Blindline on ACB Radio Mainstream, and we're taking your calls. The board's free, so if you've been thinking about giving us a call, well, you can do that now, and you're likely to get straight through. Our number's area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a conference code, it's 0480-5512. Courtesy of spiderphone.com, who make the world go round as far as Blindline is concerned. 0480-5512 is that PIN. Give us a call now, and you will get straight through. Some of the things that we've been talking about today, well, we read an article from the London Times, the Times of London, from about a month ago, talking about a settlement that's been reached, which will see a blind woman... Well, she's nearly blind. She's blind in one eye and only has a sixth of her normal vision in the right eye. She has RP. She's 30. She got pregnant after a botched sterilization operation, and she has been granted a six-figure sum. And the interesting thing about this is, according to English law, she would normally not get a compensatory payment because it's viewed that when you give birth to a normal child, there are a normal child, goodness gracious me, to a child without any disability, then there are incalculable benefits of having a child. However, but because she was blind, they've decided to pay her this massive compensation, and we've been talking about that. Let's go back to the phones, though, and say hello to this unknown caller.
Hello, was that me?
That's you.
Hey, Jonathan, it's Lois.
How are you, Lois? It's a long time since we've heard you.
Yes, I've heard you fairly regularly, though.
Oh, dear, that must be dreadful for you.
No, that's fine. I now have a secondary line in my home, so I don't have to disconnect to call in, which makes it nice.
Man, you are really getting high tech.
Yes.
You haven't thought about getting DSL, though, have you?
Yes, but it isn't in my area. I'm in a semi-rural area, and I can't have it here yet.
Oh, man. You'll never...
I thought about that first, because I'm paying almost as much to have two lines as I would to have a DSL line, but it's not in this area yet.
Well, if it ever does come your way, you'll just not believe it. It's wonderful.
I believe it because, boy, my modem speed for downloading lately is at crawl.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no fun. No fun at all.
No, especially if it's something fairly large. I was thinking about downloading that JAWS 4.01, but that's about 20 megs, and I don't know. It would be working away forever.
That's right, and if you can, you might want to wait for JAWS 4.02 when it comes out of public beta, because there, in my view, there are some real issues with that 4.01 release. It's quite sluggish in places, and 4.02 public beta is, even with the public beta, a lot more stable.
Well, also, I went up to the site and read the things, and most of the newer things are for XP. I mean, there's some things that would be okay, but I'm not in need of it right now. It's just interesting. I'll probably wait till I've got another upgrade coming, and I'll probably wait and get the disk next fall. I don't imagine O2 would be out much before that, will it?
I think O2 is not far away at all. But, you know, one of the really nice things about 4.01, and of course it's been continued into the O2 release, is the support they've introduced for HTML headings. So if you've got a page that's designed properly, you can bring up this list of headings, or you can just use a couple of hotkeys and zap between the headings on a page, and that's a great feature, big time saver.
That would help with a lot of things, wouldn't it?
Yes, you're dependent on the webmaster to design the page properly, but when they have, it's very good.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'll have to... that was one of the things that attracted me to it, which made me think about downloading it, but lately my download speed's been so terrible. So, unless it was really necessary, I wasn't going to bother.
Mm, fair enough.
Yes. PC was talking about Eudora.
Yeah, good old Eudora, yeah.
Are you saying Eudora is not up to date, or did I misunderstand?
No, I was talking about Pure Voice that comes with Eudora, and that they haven't really done any work on Pure Voice for quite a long time, but it's still a very good program.
I wasn't so worried about the Pure Voice, the speech aspect of it. But I was looking at, apparently, it has much more flexibility with mailboxes or mail accounts, because I found that they give you several mail accounts with the ISP I have, and I can't use them the way I want to. I guess I could if I went to the bother of logging on with different usernames and that sort of nonsense. I was trying to think of an easier way to handle large volumes of email. I wanted to subscribe to some of the high-tech, blind tech,
yep,
PC audio and these things, but there's such a volume of mail. And I wanted to direct them into these individual boxes and then go get them when I wanted to.
Good idea.
But I think, and I'm using Outlook Express, I think it all comes into the same inbox.
No. Outlook Express, there are two things you're talking about at once, I think. First one is that if you've got multiple email addresses that you're entitled to with different POP3 accounts, in other words,
yes,
you can certainly subscribe, you know, to all your lists using one address that's separate from your regular email address.
Mm-hmm.
And then using Outlook Express, you can do a couple of things. You can most certainly create other accounts. You just go to the Tools menu and choose Accounts, and you'll be able to create another account for your mail. And then the next thing you need to do is to create a series of rules, which are available from the Tools menu, and then you choose Rules from there. And you can say, for example, whenever you see the blindtech@yahoogroups.com in the header, move the messages from that, move the messages with that into a folder called BlindTech. So it's all possible with Outlook Express.
Oh, okay. I haven't got the hang of some of this yet, and I've got a tutorial I'm working on, and I haven't gone far enough into it, I guess.
There's also, in main menu in the archives page, there's a tutorial that was done by, I think, Bob Prayan, if my memory serves me correctly, about how to use rules in Outlook Express.
Okay, there's been some things on that, and I'm beginning to use it a little bit. In fact, I'm blocking some nonsense that's coming. requested.
Well, you know, we've got about 170 hours of material in that main menu archive now, and it's quite an amazing resource for finding out information about just about anything.
Yes, I haven't been up there recently, but some months ago, I've downloaded a lot of things from there, and I've got to go back up there now and go looking for things because you forget. I know it's an immense collection. Are things? Let me see now. Have you put? Do I know how to find now what number belongs to what program?
Well, on the website, all you need to do is to search for, let's say, if you're using JAWS, you do a Control F and do a search for the words Outlook Express. And when you find a match, you just back tab up to the previous link that has a date on it, and you can just push enter and start that show playing.
Oh, okay. So you're doing a find search thing. Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Will do. And this lady in England, that's outrageous.
It is outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't help us at all, but the whole thing is bizarre. And unfortunately, we still have things like that going on. I know totally blind people that have raised children and are doing fine. And I,
yeah.
I don't know what can be said about these things. It's outrageous they even still happen today, at least in the West.
It is. And as I say, I feel sorry for her personally, because clearly she hasn't had access to the rehab that she needs.
No, and that's often a problem wherever you are. I have my issues about that and have pretty much gone my own path because of it, but some people aren't able to do that for whatever reason.
That's right, yeah.
And so it's not fair that they're trapped, if you will, in these situations because of it.
Well, good to hear from you, Lois, and all the best with your learning new skills. It's always fun doing that.
Oh, I'm working away, and I learn a lot from you and from your work on ACB Radio.
That's
and
great.
Also, congratulations on your new appointment as director. This is great.
Thank you very much.
So take care.
Okay.
And hi to the family.
Thanks very much, Lois.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Right, we'll go to the next couple of calls. I should just clarify, I have been director since day one, but I've just expanded to 40 hours a week now. Let's go to the Sunline caller. Hello there.
Oh, good evening, Jonathan. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
That's good. Just wanted to give some information out for the Albany, New York area. We've just expanded into getting audible signals. They were just installed on Friday.
Hey, cool.
And,
well done.
Excuse me?
This is well done. That's a fantastic thing to happen.
Yeah, it's been about a year and a half in the working, but we finally got it off the ground, and they've been installed. We originally asked for two or three, and they've given us about 9 or 10. So we're certainly not complaining about that.
Brilliant. And so where are they situated?
They're on major intersections. We've got them on some of the major intersections in the downtown city area. We're hoping to possibly expand them out further, but I want to get the bugs out of these first. I don't think there's going to be any problems. We may have to up the audio on a couple of them, but outside of that, I've gotten some pretty good reviews so far.
Well, congratulations for that victory, and I hope that lots of people go out there and use them and enjoy them.
Well, I do know they're being used. In fact, it was really funny. I was going on the bus downtown, and before I could hear them on the bus, and I heard boop, boop. I was like, "Up, there they go!" So they are being used. So that's a good thing.
That's brilliant.
Now, are you going to be in Houston this year?
Yes.
You are going. Okay. We're hoping to be there. I mean, we want to go. We've heard some sort of bad reviews on as far as transportation from the airport to the hotel and vice versa, so not too keen on that, but we'll see what happens.
I hear, though, that the hotel is a wonderful venue and that the convention program is going to be first rate, so certainly hope that you'll go there. It'll be a wonderful time.
Well, I hope so, and I know last year we did not go, but I have to say I have to really commend you for the program that you ran last year, because I'll tell you, it was just like we were there. We listened to the whole thing from beginning to end, and my husband got to listen to it while it was live, and then I got, when I came home, I listened to the replay later on, and laid in bed and listened to it, and the first night, well, it must have been that Monday night, I think I was up till like 2:30 in the morning, and of course I had to get up at 6 and go to work, so I was paying for it the next day, but I didn't care.
Well, I'm glad it worked, and we're going to be working hard to make sure it goes just as smoothly this year.
Yeah, so if we, you know, if we don't make it down there, you know, personally, we'll certainly be listening on the air, that's for sure.
Terrific. Well, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Yes, you too.
Okay, bye-bye now. Well, we actually do have a couple of calls, but I only have time for the last one, so I apologize to the caller who's waiting in there, but that's how it goes. Hi, area code 305.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Lynn.
Hello, Lynn. How's it going?
Great.
Good.
Listen, I just wanted to speak on quickly on your subject of the lady that is suing us both for malpractice and using blindness as an issue.
Hmm.
You know, I always have this debate within myself of, you know, how much should we be able to use blindness for anything? For example, in Delaware here, you can get a free bus pass, which lets you basically go all over Delaware on a bus for free if you're blind. And I often, and there are some people who refuse to use that free bus pass because they feel, you know, why should a blind person get a free bus ride just because they're blind? You know, I mean, a sighted person has to pay for gas, they have to pay for insurance, they have to pay for upkeep of their car, you know, so why should we get these perks?
Hmm.
And yet, you know, and I have this debate within myself, too, is, you know, is it right to use it? I use it, though. I hate to admit it, but, you know, I always have these things. I mean, for example, I went to a fair not long ago, and they saw me with a cane, and they said, you know, well, we let the handicapped in free. And, you know, I sort of felt like, you know, I was going to have this debate with this person about, well, you know, I don't consider myself handicapped and all that, but I decided, you know, not to fight about it and just to go in there. It wasn't that much anyway, but I do. I mean, I wonder where we can draw the line. I mean, what should we be allowed to have for free, and what should we, you know, where does our responsibility stop in terms of, I mean, how disabled are we, is basically my question.
Yes, we have the same dilemma here in that we have concessions for people going on buses and even a 25% discount on airplane fares and on the trains. And my view is that we should receive compensation for the extra cost of blindness, and I've talked about that repeatedly on here, but that beyond that, I don't think that we really are benefiting in terms of integration and acceptance from that sort of philanthropy coming from transportation companies or charity, or fairground owners or whatever, because it's charity, really.
Right. Although some people say it's harder for us to get jobs, which is a good point, you know, but...
Well, I agree, but I think it's the state's responsibility to recognize that and compensate for it rather than sort of be the beneficiaries of individual charity like that.
Yes. One more quick comment before I go. I would love to see a front page, a series on front page on Main Menu.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I know it's a tough part. I mean, I love front page, but there are just a few things that I don't... Like, for example, I cannot get headings to work. I don't know how in the world...
No, I think they're broken. You know, you go to the styles menu and you choose, say, H1.
Right.
And they just don't put the H1 tag in there. No.
Right, okay, because I was thinking there must be something I'm doing wrong here. I mean, I tried doing it from the keyboard, you know, with the, what is it, Alt-Shift-1, or I forget what it is. But and then I tried going to the Styles menu. I selected things. I just could. And then even when you try to edit the HTML in HTML view, when you go back to the regular view, I noticed it takes out those tags.
Yeah, what I found works, if you're going to have to tinker with the HTML, I just load it into Notepad or something and do it in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad to know that I'm not doing something wrong.
Well, maybe we both are.
Because I went to the ACB website, the ACB radio website, and I know that you take care of that site.
Yeah.
And I said, well, he's got headings. How does he get headings?
You know? Yeah, I just go in and insert the tags manually, I'm afraid.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, and there's a little program called Virtual Stopwatch that somebody might want to do a review on. That's a pretty neat program, too.
What's it for?
It's basically a stopwatch / timer / scheduler program.
Oh, well, have you got a... You could do a review for us, maybe.
I'm not very good at that.
You'd be great.
Yeah, I thought about it, actually. I just reformatted my hard drive, and everything is wonderful on my computer. So I might actually do it.
Please do. Yeah, get in touch, and we'll show you where to upload it to and stuff.
Okay, great.
Cool. Nice to hear from you.
Okay, well, great job.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
And with Lynn's call, we end Blind Line. We'll be back next week. And, of course, there's more stimulating talk on ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community, with The Snowman and Miller Time and Bullis. So you've got Miller Time with Jim Snowbarger and Dennis Miller first. Everything's weird now because we've gone off daylight time, so it's an hour earlier for me, but I think it's still the same time in the US. So that's 1 Universal Time on Tuesday, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on a Monday night. And that'll be great. And then Bullis and the Snowman doing Sound Off the hour after that. Thank you for your participation and for tuning in, and to Lainey Feingold for an interesting hour on Accessible ATMs. Bye-bye.
For the latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org.